As part of the Leading Edge Group podcast series, Breaking the Mould, I'm here at the Royal York Hotel in Toronto this morning with Todd Hutchings, an innovator in distance learning in the healthcare space. Good morning, Todd, and good to see you again.
Good morning, Joe.
Todd, you might give our listeners a snapshot of your formative years living in Ontario. Were you born in Ontario? Were your family from the province?
Yes, I'm a true Canadian, Toronto-born here in Ontario. My family, Hutchings, is a British name. I've been here a couple generations, but you'll be happy to know that my grandparents on my mother's side are actually immigrants from Ireland.
Wow.
So there's a bit of Irish in me.
Good. Very good, Todd. In your early years, who did you look up to or who made a particular impression on you? Was there any world-renowned celebrity at the time, or was it someone more closer to home?
Well, again, as being a traditional Canadian, hockey was a big part of my early years. But I realized early, young age, that hockey was never going to be my profession going forward. So it was actually two influences to me. My dad used to always get the Popular Mechanics magazines. And back in those days, they used to really show how kind of everyday people took the latest technology and latest things, put it together and came up with some new innovative idea or a new product or something and so on. And I was always fascinated by that. And it often would be a couple years before those types of things went into full stream production. So I always thought that that was kind of neat, the way that they cobbled together things. And I always thought that was very unique and innovative. But probably in terms of a person, the biggest influence was probably my art teacher in high school. He actually kind of pushed me on the creative side, but also got me involved in television production.
Wow. So you might tell our listeners more about this interest in TV production.
Yeah, so through kind of after school, we were able to work with the local cable company, and we would produce once a week a program for the mayor. And it was a call-in program, pretty simple in terms of execution, but we were able as students to do every aspect of the job. So one week I was cameraman, the next week I was able to be the director, the next week I might have been the switcher. So I really got to understand and learn television production and really thought that that was maybe my future direction.
And what made that change?
Well, I actually was offered a position as a community producer there, but I opted to get an education. And so I went off and got my degree in television production. The goal that I would end up being in a TV station somewhere, either as a cameraman or doing something like that.
So, but instead, you joined the Ontario Hospital Association, more widely known as the OHA, back in 1984. So can you explain who the OHA are and your early roles in the organization?
Sure. So from school, I was actually able to get a co-op placement at the Ontario Hospital Association.
Okay.
So Ontario Hospital Association represents the hospitals in the province of Ontario. And at the time when I joined, there was about 150 hospitals in the province. We're down to about 135 now, a few have merged and so forth. But basically the role of the OHA was to provide advocacy for those members, to do education, as well as some labor negotiations and a few other things around policies and public affairs types issues. So I began as a co-op student in 84. In 85, I was hired full-time as an audiovisual technician and eventually an AV producer. So I was able to apply some of that creativity of my early years producing videos for a lot of hospital foundations. They used it as promotions for fundraising in the community. I remember doing a slideshow in particular around a new birthing unit and showing kind of how state-of-the-art that was. So that was the early years, but unfortunately in 91, OHA got out of the creative business and I was able to move to a new position in education where I basically planned 1 and 2 day conferences. And for the first few years, I was able to take those across the province regionally. And that experience really showed me A, the size of the province, and B, the diversity and the needs of our members across the province. So the needs in Toronto were obviously very different from the needs in Northern Ontario.
Okay. And what was that before the Health Achieve conferences?
So Health Achieve existed at that time. In fact, they've been going on now for since the association started, for over 90 years. But that was kind of an annual event that drew people into the city. So now I was actually meeting people in the regions and learning more about their specific specific needs, which would later help me when it came to developing the distance learning side of things and being able to get content out to them.
So Todd, can you tell us a little bit more about technology-based education and your subsequent role as a director of distance learning?
Absolutely. So in about 2000-2001, the province was actually providing hospitals in Northern Ontario with video conferencing equipment.
Okay.
And that was designed for this telemedicine and the ability for the Northern hospitals to reach specialists in Toronto. Well, the equipment was only being used for a portion of the time for clinical practice. And our members in the North were saying, why don't you produce education so that we can access it through video conference? So this was a whole new area for OHA. We had been very much the traditional conference style and some in-class type programming. So this was a whole new venture. So I was given the opportunity to head that up. And so in 2004, we actually did our first pilot project right out of this building here at the Royal York, our first video conference to our members. I think we had 16 sites connected. Back then, our bridge capacity was only about 20. So it began here. And within the next couple years, we got our own equipment. And we began producing these on every couple weeks. I think at first it might have been monthly, but our big issue became capacity. So we've got 150 hospitals at the time. Our bridge at the peak period was only able to hold up to 100 lines, 100 connections. We had to look at what other technology was out there that we could offer to complement the video conferencing so that we could reach that capacity. This is where webcasting evolved and came in. And so we then started doing it actually in dual mode, both video conference and webcasting, which was a little tricky because there's a time delay with webcasting, but we were able to work around that, and today we do strictly webcasting.
But healthcare, Todd, I would regard it as a very traditional sector. So the thought of the healthcare sector embracing this type of delivery, I would have thought would have been difficult at the beginning.
Absolutely, and I think the challenge that senior management at OHA had at the time was exactly that. Will they embrace this? Are we going to invest a bunch of money into equipment that's not going to get used? Fortunately or unfortunately, the economy was probably what drove this the most. The hospitals didn't have the extra funds for travel. The labor issue, being able to send somebody away for 2 days to a conference was a challenge when there were so many cutbacks within hospitals. So it kind of worked in our favor. Now you could stay at your own facility, get up-to-date information, education, right at your fingertips without having to leave your location. And it was the same quality as being there in person. Now, you didn't get the same interactive networking ability, but you saved a lot of money.
Did members embrace the technology?
We were very fortunate in that I think we did it the right way, and the membership actually embraced it, and it was becoming more and more popular as time went on. People were probably a little nervous at first because of the whole technology aspect, but once they were able to see that they could literally point and click and have it come up, that they could submit questions online, we would answer them live.
Keep people engaged.
Absolutely. So we were able to really leverage the technology, and it was reliable. And that was the key factors. Once people got comfortable with it, it was taking off. They would love to have been there.
Of course.
But the savings to them was worth it. In fact, we had people in the North that would say, we'll pay the same price as a conference if you can stream this to us, because we just can't afford those additional expenses of the travel and time away from the office.
Okay.
So it was very well accepted. Evaluations were always excellent. We did our best to follow up if there was technical glitches, which typically were more bandwidth issues than anything else, but we were very successful.
And Todd, in relation to bandwidth issues, is that a problem today, or are a lot of those problems being solved?
A lot of it has been solved. The technology, there's what they call smooth stream technology, which basically sends the signal at whatever you can accept. So if you've got great bandwidth, we can give you more of the high definition side of things.
Okay.
But if you're still on dial-up, we'll give you the lowest grade that we can, and your computer will read that and accept it that way. So we were able to leverage that technology, which really solved a lot of problems, particularly with people that weren't dialing in from the office, may have been at home, so
yes.
Our trustees and things like that, that may be calling in or viewing an event from home. That was actually a huge improvement for us for those types of broadcasts.
Now, you seem to have really pushed the boat out again in the distance education space over the last number of years. So what type of...
Well, the webcasting was only half of the story, because at the same time, we were doing online learning.
Okay.
Which is really your traditional courses that you would take online on your computer, you would sign up for them. And so we were able to partner with a few different partners to make available different programs. So everything from Lean to Management Essentials with Harvard Business School, right up to our own products, where they were specific courses designed specifically for healthcare professionals. And so complementing our kind of day-to-day topics or issues type programs through webcasts with these core programs online was really able to enhance what we did for the membership and engage them and get them involved. So as things evolved, I was always looking to try and continually improve what we were doing. So things like enhancing the way we engage our members, so things like polling, things like the ability to answer and ask questions on the fly, the ability to search and find content that you want without having to watch 30 minutes of the program,
okay,
to be able to go to a chapter and say, okay, there's exactly the topic I was looking for. Those are the enhancements that we were implementing in the latter stages and continually looking at ways to make it a better experience for our members.
And Todd, what's the future for distance learning, both maybe in healthcare and also in a general context? And what do you see as the future trends?
Well, again, I see this will continue to be more and more important, especially with the current economy. If people need to know what's happening, they need to share ideas and so on to reduce costs within the system. So the ability to find things online, the ability to search for content and find good, accurate content quickly and effectively, I think is where you'll see future developments in terms of online learning. The ability to engage these members is critical. If you don't have a way to make people interested, they're going to go right by your site. So you need to be able to make content available that is what they're looking for, easy to find, and of the highest quality.
And in your opinion, will distance learning ever replace classroom-based learning?
I don't think it'll ever replace it, because the element of networking is so key. A discussion with a fellow delegate, you can get as much out of that sometimes as the whole conference that you may be attending or that whole course that you took. It's that interpersonal experience, talking things out, getting into the details that you may not learn from the instructor or from the course. But you can still get your basic information online. So I don't think you're ever going to eliminate...
Completely.
And I think it would be a shame if you did. It's that human factor that you still need for the best learning experience.
So a type of blended...
Absolutely. I think that is the future.
It's the ideal.
Yeah, in my opinion. And that's what I find most stimulating as well.
Okay. But are universities fully embracing distance and online learning?
I think so. And if you look now, most university students, when they enroll, they actually have an option to apply for the online side of things. So you can now get all your courses captured and available online. So if you're sick and you miss a course, you can watch it later that night, the next day, the day before your next lecture, and get caught up on what content is out there. And as more and more people, as the archives of this content continue to grow, this is where that searchable content is going to be very beneficial, especially to students who are looking to say, okay, I get everything that the instructor said, but I'm really having trouble with tack time.
Yeah, okay.
They'll search tack time and they'll get segments of that particular lecture that may highlight that, or they'll find the whole library of content that is around that particular topic. So absolutely, this is the future with universities. I've even heard some examples where the instructor only has enough room for 50 students in their class, but they can now open enrollment up to 100 because 50 of those are going to sign up online. So it's an opportunity for universities actually to even expand the capacity of their lecture halls by making it available online.
Okay. And what does the future hold for Todd?
Great question. I'm sort of semi-retired at the moment, but I really enjoy sharing my experience with people and helping organizations kind of look at what they're doing, where they can move forward. I'm involved with a few advisory groups that are sharing best practices, and I'm just amazed at where things are going and how people are leveraging technology into the future and some of these best practices. So who knows, you may see me doing more webcasts again in the future. I certainly think there's a great opportunity in healthcare to share that type of information, both provincially, nationally, and even internationally. Despite what we say about Canadian healthcare system, it's still one of the best in the world. And so I think that is really a message that should get out internationally.
And is there room for more collaboration between all these different organizations, all these educational institutions?
Absolutely. I think so. I know we were doing some work with Australia around wound care. The same practices that they apply there, we were applying here. And so there are certain things that I think are truly universal. But if they've learned a better technique or a better way to clinically practice this, why not share this internationally? Why not leverage
Absolutely.
That and make it better for the whole world?
Fantastic, Todd. So I would like to thank you, Todd, for giving us your time this morning and for sharing with us your insights into the evolving trends in distance learning and how it will influence the global education space in the future. Thank you, Todd.
My pleasure. Thanks, Joe.